Okay. If you will be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor and come follow me. And it said right after that, the young man walked away sadly because he had many possessions. In other words, really, really difficult to let go of whatever I was holding as tremendously important or essential to my being. That might be a great way of putting it. What am I holding on to that I think is essential to my being that really isn't? Or that I define myself as that really isn't? And so in order to be able to participate in the kingdom, and we're going to cover this in the reading tonight, is there's still going to be stuff that you and I are going to need to work on. Doesn't mean that all of my stuff has to disappear before I get into the kingdom. But as we ended last week, I need to be willing to look at that differently, to allow it to the three things that I keep coming up with is either to release it, to heal it, or to transform it, or some combination of those three. And as long as I am willing to carry out that process, even though I might still be carrying some stuff, I can still be in that awareness of perfection, might be the best way of putting it. I can still be in the kingdom. Remembering too what Jesus said about the kingdom is, first of all, the kingdom of heaven is within you. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's right now. Mm-hmm. And the way you enter into the kingdom is with the eyes and the heart of a child. I'm going to be on, unless we got anything else you want to bring up before we get started. You can tell I'm cranked up already here.
As you should be.
It was that Buddha story that did it. Okay. I'm going to begin on page 104, and I'm going to read the last paragraph that we sort of stopped with last week. Now, each of you who comes to us in identity seeks penance. Not that you've done something wrong, but you want something to be explained or elucidated. Tell me what I must do right and must release. Tell me what I have done wrong so I may rectify it. And these are the new ways we would answer those questions. The small self who seeks penance, or to abnegate what she is, or to self-define in low vibration, is in fact what is reclaimed or renowned or repronounced by the true self in the claims we have offered you. And the claim I have come, which is the manifest divine in full expression for the service to the world that she can offer, is the articulation or the renunciation of what has been. You are not the same person or being you were 5 minutes ago. Now, by renunciation, what we mean is you are no longer ennobling fear, the small self's fear, or the small self's negation of who and what she is. You cannot call yourself names as the true self. In other words, not just an idea, it's not just a name. It's preposterous to think you could by saying, I'm in my true self. Dig me. So the suffering self or the small self with the whip in hand is actually held and renowned and in fact appropriated in high service, because then there can be no aspect of you that is separate from the source. So let's suppose I imagine one of my fears, or maybe many of my fears, as being like a scared little child. What we used to call a frightened inner child. Remember, we did all of that stuff in the 80s, you know, adult children work. And I wonder what all that stuff kind of disappeared, or adult children grew up. We became unwounded and everything became fine as soon as we entered a new millennium. Anyway, what we do is we don't throw that away and say, oh, that's just my scared little ego. I say, come here, man. Come to me, all you are burdened, heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come here. Let me hold you. Let me hug you. Let me hold you until your winter is gone. Let me hold you until your fear is gone. Because we're still going to be moving forward. I am not going to allow your fear, as real as it seems to you, I am not going to let your fear get in the way of my growth and my awareness and my healing. So come on. I'm not pushing you away. I'm not denying your hurt. I'm not denying your fear. But I am welcoming you to come into the circle of my unconditional love and my caring so that we can walk this road together, so that you and I can both heal together. And I can take you back in. I can integrate you into myself as another part of my personality, my eco-consciousness. And I can integrate you as being a teacher, as being another lesson I can learn from. And I invite you to be part of my life. And I let you in. I don't have to allow your fear to create fear inside me. So there's a real power here and a real gentleness as well. When we come to realize that much of our work up until this point has been sort of forced almost to some degree of, oh, I got to work on that. Oh, there's another part of me that's all crappy and all messed up. Oh, you know, when is this going to end? Instead of, it's like Jesus, when he was talking to the woman taken in adultery, he said, does anyone condemn you? She said, no one, Lord. He said, well, neither do I. I invite you to be part of the kingdom. So we're inviting even those parts of ourselves that for a while or maybe for a long time that we found unacceptable. There is nothing about you that's unacceptable. Even your fear. It's not who you are. But I don't reject you even though you are afraid. I don't reject you even though you're holding on to your woundedness. I don't reject you at all. In fact, I embrace you even because of that, so that you might learn whatever it is you need to learn. He interrupts again. Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, what I was just going to share is that what you just spoke about reminds me of one of my daily affirmations that was given to me when I was going through practitioner training. And it's twofold. The first one is, I'm not bound by any of my mistakes. And then what goes after that is, and I replace God with the universe. The universe holds nothing against me. Mm-hmm. And I put like a little tagline on it. The universe holds nothing against me. Why would I hold anything against myself?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. I can't tell you the number of people that I've worked with, especially people who are new in recovery. And we would talk about forgiveness. And inevitably, any number of them would say something to the effect of, I know that my wife forgives me. I know that my kids forgive me. I just can't forgive myself. And I go, well, I'm not going to argue with you, but that's where your work is. Because if you're walking around, again, with a sense of, not just a sense of guilt, a sense of unworthiness. That's one of the things forgiveness gives us, is a sense of being worth. Forgiveness or unforgiveness is another way of saying unworthiness. And if I'm still walking around with that sense of unworthiness, which is also a sense of separateness, if I'm still walking around with that, it's going to be really, really difficult, if not somewhat impossible, for me to be able to heal. Now, here's the catch. Forgiveness does not come from my small self that feels guilty. In other words, I think I'll smash the hell out of my guilt. And then that'll turn into forgiveness. Doesn't happen that way. Forgiveness comes from allowing the light to come in. Forgiveness comes to allow ourselves, no matter how we feel, no matter what our history might be, to allow ourselves to be embraced by our higher consciousness. And when we are embraced by our higher consciousness, or allow ourselves to be embraced by our higher consciousness, then unworthiness does not exist. It cannot exist in that moment in time. Paul interrupts again. But can these things be released? Or are they all reintegrated? Notice what he's doing here. He's creating an intellectual framework. They either have to be this or that. Are they released or are they integrated? The mind says it's got to be one or the other. Pick or choose. And the guides come in and they say, both may be true. Both may be true. If there is something that you have outgrown, there is no way to carry it with you to the upper room. If there is something that you're outgrown, something that no longer serves you, in other words, you've already wrung it out for all it's worth. I've learned... I'm not sure what it might be for you, but I've learned everything I freaking can learn from this. Next step, let it go. And the mind goes, but. You know when you've wrung that one dry, okay? The one I keep coming back to, that seems to be a lifelong lesson, is my not enoughness. I know that I wrung that thing out for the best of my, there ain't no more water in that one, man. And so the only other step that I have left here is letting go of that one. If it comes back in again, I go, look, I look, honestly look at it and say, nope, sorry, man. You're done. You're cooked. Right? You're toast.
Yep. Jerry.
Yeah.
I was just thinking when you were saying that, how for so long in my life, what felt normal to me, for me, and even what was my story was I was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a victim. And finally, I guess as I got sober, I started to see that, you know, I didn't want to be a victim anymore. I wanted to live. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to have joy. And letting go of that victim role, It can leave you feeling empty because it's been everything you are, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's been your life.
Yeah.
And so I had to, like you say, relearn and to integrate the not being a victim part or being a victim part into me and accepting it and moving on.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you, Diane. Mm-hmm. It's tremendously important because I think that I know for me, the label being a victim came from external circumstances, thing out there someplace, until I finally realized that I was making myself the victim. It wasn't just a label I put on myself because of external circumstances. And so that, and once we let go of something like that, that has been so important, such an integral part of our identity, that there really is sometimes kind of a hole there, an empty space that I really need to fill up with light, with love, with grace, with whatever you want to call it. But don't deny that one. It doesn't just disappear and fill up all by itself. I want to be able to realize, yes, once I grieve something, once I let it go, there's going to be a little bit or maybe a lot of emptiness that goes with that, that is also is asking me to open myself up to healing. But fortunately, by that time, usually, we have enough tools at our disposal and enough awareness of who and what we are to allow that to come in. However, we have to say that if you had an investment in fear or in anger or in shame or self-doubt or debasement, they may need to be renown, as Diane pointed out, in order to be acclimated to and then move beyond as you lift to the upper room. In fact, there is no self-abasement at that level of vibration. Not enoughness does not exist. So what you integrate in some ways is what you may call acceptance or allowance. But for the purpose of integration and moving beyond what has stood in the way of your expression, if there is no need for something, it will be left behind. If it requires integration and realignment through you, if there is purpose for it still, it will be made known and reclaimed in the harmonics that we call the divine self in its expansion or an expression of tone. In other words, if it still needs some working on, you don't have to hold on to it or grasp it like, you don't have to even judge, you don't even have to figure out how do I heal this. If you realize there is not an aspect or a pattern of thought or a pattern of behavior that needs healing, I open myself up to that healing. I open myself up to divine consciousness. See, there's my small self, my limited awareness that lives in fear and anger and separation. And then there's my higher self where that stuff just does not exist, which, by the way, we occupy that realm periodically during a day, sometimes without even realizing it, right? And then there is this energetic part of you and me that the Course in Miracles calls the decider, or what some people might refer to as the observer self or the observer consciousness. And this is a part of us or an aspect of our soul that sort of sees the whole picture and sees that I can embrace this in lower energy or I can embrace this in higher energy. I've got a choice here. And one of the things we're doing without talking about it too much, in fact, I'm not sure we even mentioned this idea before, is we are really cultivating that energetic form of our awareness to become aware of where in each moment of consciousness there is a choice involved of either allowing this to be in high energy, high vibration, or low energy, low vibration. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're not conscious, when we're not aware, the ego and the personality normally are gravitated to lower vibration. That's just part of their nature. That's why we say we're always creating. We're either creating from consciousness or unconsciousness. And one of the things we're doing here on Tuesday evening, for certainly at other times in our lives, is cultivating that awareness that can continually and lovingly choose higher vibration.
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but it just kind of, I don't know. I guess I don't know my answer. If I'm in lower vibration, or if I'm in victim consciousness, unconscious, it's by default, and there must be something that I'm getting from that for me to like want to stay in this consciousness, some sort of reward, because I'm comfortable, although it's seemingly, I would think it's uncomfortable, but there has to be something that maybe the word I'm looking at is attention, because I'm in this mode, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. There's a real level or layer of paradox here. The way a teacher of mine put it was, we normally think that the small self, the personality, ego, consciousness, is addicted to feeling good as opposed to feeling bad, which makes obvious logical sense. And she said, that's not it. The ego and the personality consciousness are attached to intensity rather than something that is good or bad. In fact, she said, you will notice that if you are depressed, for instance, you start doing things that even deepen the depression. Pull down the shades, turn on sad country music, whatever you might happen to do with that, okay? And so it's really kind of interesting. Now, there's a couple of things that happen here. One is that I increase the tension of that feeling until it has to just kind of blow up. And maybe that's one of the reasons why I do it. However, we do need to realize that when I'm working out of my lower vibrational consciousness, I am attracted to the intensity of those negative emotions, rather than, you know, labeling something good or labeling something bad. And once I got that, it started making a whole lot of sense to me. So, you know, that's another kind of caution light that might go on. When I find myself, let's say, one of my favorite bumper stickers that I saw years ago was, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. I mean, and that was perfect for today's lesson, all right? Or just watch the news, all right? If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. And I remember reading that, and I saw it, and I go, yeah, right on, man, I'm outraged. And I discovered I had a whole list of things I could be outraged by. I mean, they were right there. I didn't even have to write them down. They were all in my memory bank. And then I realized was, where is my outrage getting me? And I realized that the only thing that was getting me more outrage. And I could feel myself almost fueling that fire. Outrage determining, creating more and more outrage. Anger creating more outrage. Fear creating more fear. And so it came into my awareness. I said, do I really want to feed that? And recognize that my prayer might happen to be, again, I might not be in feeling this emotionally, but my prayer might be, Lord, that I may see. Can I see this? Can I see this person? Can I see this situation in a higher realm of light, in a higher realm of consciousness? Because on my own, I ain't doing it, man. I'm stuck in outrage. And in fact, there's part of me that's enjoying the hell out of the outrage.
But Jerry, that goes to what you just mentioned. My observer self, my looking at myself as an observer to say, man, I'm fueling this more and more, and I'm getting more and more outrage. You know, and then I guess a light bulb comes on and says, wait a minute, stop it. I don't want more and more of this.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to turn up the volume to get your attention. And maybe that's one of the ways that my soul works. You need to turn up the volume on your outrage so you realize that it's getting you no place except more outrage. So it's interesting. I never quite thought of it that way before, but that might be a built-in mechanism of my psyche, my soul, right? To get my attention to say, do you really want to keep doing this? Because something like anger or fear or outrage has a tremendous amount of energy by itself. I don't know about you guys, but it can suck me in. Can eat my lunch.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, I remember when I was just younger and growing up and all that, that I lived for a crisis. That crisis just got me going.
Mm-hmm.
It was like my adrenaline. And today I don't even like it when just the little bitty thing goes wrong. I like this feeling of peace and comfort. But a crisis was like a wildfire that just set, you know,
mm-hmm.
I had to have a crisis because that's how I was raised. There was always a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Really good point. Thank you. Now, this is a new idea for him, the harmonics of tone. We're not just talking about sound waves here. We're talking about vibration, being in harmony. The divine self has tone, expression. And every expression you can think of in the manifest world is also in tone. The fabric of the experience that you inhabit here in shape and form, in solidity, that you think is so terribly real, is all sound and vibration. And the divine as what you are, the manifest divine in skin and bone, in breath and blood, is also this. That's a great sentence. And the divine is what you are, the manifest divine. The manifest divine in skin and bone, in breath and blood, is also this. And when you shift your expression through the alignment as the divine self, the tone in articulation has the power to know itself in the vibratory echo that confirms the divinity in anything else that has taken form. I must be in alignment to my own divinity before I'm going to be able to see it out there. So I can say the words, I am in my divine self, my divine consciousness. But if I really want to know if I'm in that vibration rather than just the words or the ideas, how am I seeing the world? Am I seeing the world as being a place of unconditional love? No matter what else might be going on. And even if I don't understand it, can I see this? Can I perceive this as a reflection as unconditional love? Let me read that sentence again. I love that. And the divine is what you are, the manifest divine in skin and bone, in breath and blood, is also this. And when you shift your expression through the alignment as the divine self, the tone in articulation has the power to know itself in the vibratory echo that confirms the divinity in anything else that has taken form. The bell is rung as you, and it claims itself in sound, in tone, in everything it encounters. The Christ itself as you is a manifest self, created self, one that is manifest here in the physical world as well as the divine world. It is not an identity. It is not a new way of walking around the world in your holiness. It's the realization of the holiness that has always been. And its tone, its allowance is the claim, I have come. You're not creating anything new. And I say, oh, I finally have a divine consciousness. It's always been there. Never went anyplace. Jesus said many, many times, I will never leave you alone. And that is kind of two meanings. You know, I'll never leave, the literal one, I will never leave you alone. Be not afraid, little flock, I will never leave you alone. I have come, I've overcome the world. That's always present, I'll never leave you. But then there's the other kind of the flip side of I'll never leave you alone. I will keep poking and prodding you and rubbing your hair and patting you on the back until you wake up and stay awake. I will keep bugging the shit out of you. Because you've asked me to, whether you realize it or not, I will keep bugging you, right? Until you remain awake and don't need me to make you awake anymore. That's one of the reasons why I'm here.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
So just to sum that up for me, in terms of my vibrational higher consciousness self, that's within me. And when I step into the marketplace of my life and my world, and I'm, you know, interacting with folks, there's, I can feel that. So basically what I got out of that, game recognizes game.
Yeah.
Or my frequency recognizes a frequency in someone else.
And you know, you can do that or use that same energy in any number of different ways. I remember Ram Dass was talking about the grace he says before meals, which is taken from a lot from his Hindu teaching, his Hindu guru named Kruli Baba. But he said, what it turns out to be is I realize that sitting down having a meal is actually God eating God, God feeding God. What else is there? It's not, oh, I bless this food. It's so nice that I'm so grateful to have. Well, that's nice. And I mean, and again, that's not making a judgment about that. But the reality is that I'm not only grateful for this, this is God feeding God and God being grateful for God feeding God. Never ends. Now, when this is claimed as the true self, the monad is the place where there's no separation. There's just one, period. When this is claimed as the true self, the monad, the divine expression of the being that you are, becomes as a diamond, and its many facets spread light without intention. In other words, I'm going to spread my light to make this better. I'm going to spread my light because I am the light. I can't do anything else but spread the light because that's who and what I am. I don't have any conditions on this. Without intention. Because all a diamond can do is refract and reflect the light that it is. It has no other intention but to be. And because it is as it is, it claims the world in value, the diamond in value and everything in value that the light may shine upon. How did Pink Floyd put it? Shine, you crazy diamond, shine. Let me do one more paragraph here and then we'll do a meditation. Actually, this is a long paragraph, so I just might use only part of it. Paul interrupts again. See, Paul's always doing, he wants to understand with his head. His mind, you know, you accept the spiritual truth and you go, oh. And then your mind goes, but. Could be me. He interrupts, but the light shines on some pretty awful things. We are not very evolved as a species. We harm ourselves and each other. We war, we fight, we weep in anger and despair. What does the light do upon the unholy? What unholy? The guys asked. If nothing is holy, there is no God. There's no teaching. And your idea of the disposable self is perfectly appropriate to your growth. The identity of the divine is not gifted to you. It is inherited, implicit, and seeking to be known explicitly. And this is done by the light that shines upon all, everything. If something is revealed by the great light that needs new ways, reformation, renewing, reclaiming, It is done in octaves and in agreement to the holiness that must be. You cannot make a thing holy, but you can sure try to damn it. To damn anything, to put anything out of the light, is an action of the small self, never the true self. When the true self sees an atrocity, it brings the light and the action of the divine to bear upon it. It needs no sword. It needs no claim of truth. I have come. And it is never the small self who can claim that. The virtue of the small self at its very best is it does not know what we mean by this gift, by this teaching, and is far more powerful than the true self in its expression has known itself through form and field in centuries and thousands of years. Lord, that I may see. I can't see it here, but I know it's there.
This reminds me, Jerry, what you say a lot of, if it closes your heart or if it opens your heart, and don't damn it if it closes it. It's saying here that you need reformation. So I think my heart gets, when it's closed, it's reformed. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I don't walk away with my heart closed. It teaches me a lesson, and I'm reformed through that lesson.
Yeah. And see, when I close anything else out of the circle, I close myself too. I don't realize that consciously. But if you put, kind of an interesting formula thing. If I put someone else outside of the light, which I really can't do, because they're always in the light anyway. But if I do that consciously through the auspices of my small or little self, then I am putting myself out of there as well. Came across a line from a song. You can't put your brother in the dark and expect to see the light.
That's good.
Or you can't put your sister in the dark and expect to see the light. So let's take a few minutes with all of that. That's a lot. Good. We covered kind of the secret of enlightenment. So let's take a few minutes to put your stuff down if you like. Take a couple of breaths. And I know for me, on one level, my mind is sort of spinning. But I also realize on another level, there is this sense of quiet spaciousness. It's not a nothing. Everything exists. It's peaceful and active at the same time. And follow your breath for a moment or so. Letting it move inward and outward. Inward and outward. And imagine, if you will, that you are reclined or sitting. in a peaceful, warm, gentle, healing space. You might have some physical images that are connected with that, being by a flowing stream or the ocean, or walking in the forest, or even sitting in your backyard. And yet again, those images might not even be necessary. You are just in a space of healing. Let everything else be just the way it is. If there are other noises coming on around you, just let them be. You don't have to push them away. You don't have to react to them. Just be. I am in the light. I am the light. I invite everyone and everything to share the light with me. I live in this space where we are both one and unique expressions of divine consciousness. I am grateful for my being. I am grateful for our being. This silence and spaciousness is always here. It is not a part of me, I am a part of it. And allow yourself gently to come back to an awareness of your breath, following its movement inwardly, outwardly. And when you're ready to, you can stretch, open your eyes. And I'm just reminded of some of the words we began with. of the Buddha getting ready to drop his physical form, saying to his disciples, there will be another Buddha come after me, and his name will be love. Thank you all for sharing the space. Love you much. Have a
wonderful day. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jerry.
Love you too.
Yeah.
Have a good week, Jerry. Have a good week, guys.
You too.
Thank you, Jerry.